Rockstars coming at you from Sheetown, England.
Hey guys, welcome to the party. We are the Weekend Rockstars, your number one podcast for all the tips, tricks and licks you need for getting started in music. I am Scott Freeman, and with me as always is Mr. Billy, now cold calls, Deadman.
I am a cold caller. Look out, because I'm going to be calling you.
Yeah. Is there the opposite of a cold caller? Is there a hot caller out there?
There's, yeah.
There's definitely a whole market for that.
I guess it's a bit of a dumb question, but yeah.
Everybody likes a hot call.
If a salesperson has a red hot lead, that's a hot call.
Okay.
Get on it.
Red hot lead.
I was thinking more about those sketchy adverts in the back of the newspaper.
That's different kind of hot lead.
Okay, and
experienced older lady. Yeah, let's leave that there. This is a PG podcast at best.
We have a guest again with us, becoming a bit of a regular, Mr. Tom Riddler.
What's
how you doing,
up?
Bud? You might want to drag your mic closer towards you if you're going to...
If I'm going to recline.
Recline, yeah.
Consider me reclined, okay. Ladies and gentlemen. I'm reclining.
He's reclining. Okay, cool. So today's our 15th podcast.
Wow, we were.
Pretty cool, eh?
Oh, boy.
And, today we're going to be talking about what the difference is between a good and a bad musician.
And an ugly one.
And
the good, the bad, and the fugly.
The good, bad, and the fugly. This is something I've encountered as I've, been a musician. I mean, it's hard to say when I became a musician. I don't know if you guys could put a pin on, like, this is the day I became a musician. Is it the day you pick up a guitar or the day you start writing a song? Like, when is it you become a musician? Let's go through that first.
I mean,
Billy.
I'm not... Oh. No, go. He said Billy. He said, you talk, sir. I was just going to say, I'm not even entirely sure I would classify myself as one these days.
Be quiet.
I mean, I am. But also, like, it's not my main thing anymore.
It's not your main thing, but, like, you know, like... You build computers as well,
I'm definitely not an IT consultant.
You're not an IT consultant, but you're not like, there's not really a title for it, but you build computers, but that's still part of you.
You're right.
Music's in the heart, bro.
It never leaves.
Would you say there's a date where, you know, or a year where you feel like this is when I became a musician?
It was September 17,
I feel like he's
2003.
Are you making this up?
Or is this
quite possibly.
You're full of shit.
This is going to be a real incredible deep story.
But, I was sitting there in the classroom, year 10, and all my friends are like, I got myself a guitar. I can play guitar. I'm playing guitar as well. Oh, I'm playing guitar. I'm also playing guitar. And I was like, and they're like, what are you going to play? I was like, I'm going to play the bass.
I'm going to do it.
I'm going to play the bass. Because, everyone else is playing the guitar.
And if it wasn't for the bass, the ladies wouldn't shake it. And
exactly.
If the ladies don't shake it, is it even a
game? What is life?
What is life?
I figured every band's going to need a bass player. And I knew...
This is true.
I just knew that I couldn't coordinate myself enough to do drums anyway. As much as I'd love to be able to play drums, I can't do four things at once.
It's not
I
that
bet
you would be able
it's
to
not...
by now. It's called practice.
Oh, I bet, maybe, yeah. But there was also the guiding influence of the fact that my dad was a bass player back in the day. So I figured this is a good player. I was born to be a bass player. So
in the blood.
So on that particular day, I went running home, as you do, from school. And I got home and Dad was there and he's like, how was your day, son? I was like, Dad, I want to be a bass player. And he was like, the floodlights, the heavens opened. Okay. And he was like, son, I'm going to take you to go buy your first bass. So off we went to Logan. We went to Bean Lee, which is a very rough as shit kind of town.
Okay.
And we went to the local pawn shop there, the local cash converters.
Okay, yeah.
And... And we found ourselves a nice four-string, 24-fret Yamaha bass guitar.
What color?
Black.
Nice.
It was very nice, and Dad was like, "This will do you. This will be the bass for you, son." And from that moment on, I was a musician.
Yeah.
A terrible one, but that's why. I was a musician when we got home. I plucked the string.
Yeah.
I learned how to play James Bond theme and. Oh, not even that. It was like dun 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 dun.
What's that? One of my favourite quotes from anything of all time is from Adventure Time.
Yeah.
And Jake the dog, he says, you know, sucking at something is the first step to being sort of good at something.
It's true.
It's true, man. Like, you've got to suck first. You've got to.
Another specific memory in my mind from this, like, probably this first week or so of having this Yamaha bass guitar,
yeah,
is a friend at school had shown me how to play Aerials by System of a Down.
Dun 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 dun
string. And my dad was like looking at him playing this. He's like, what are you doing that for? He picked it up. He's like, this is how you play. He just doesn't even move his hand. He's just doing it all over many strings or whatever. And I was like, huh. Like, and he's like, son, there's, you know, there's good musicians and there's bad musicians. Which you know, musicians do you think bands are going to want?
Yeah.
The good or the bad? And I was like, well, obviously the good. He's like, damn right, they're going to want the good. So you got to be good. So
that's
then
cool.
He hit me. Not physically. Just hit me metaphorically, you know, with this sage advice.
Oh my god. That reminds me of the Dylan Moran thing. The cage comes down.
The cage with the Japanese fighting spiders. Strike a match off his forearm. Tells you the darts were money.
Yeah. I guess from that sage advice moment, I was like determined to get better and to be one of the bass players that people would want.
That is one
of
the best. I think the best bits of advice that I was ever given was. In terms of like musicianship, is that you've got to find the easy way to do it. Don't you know? Yeah. Like you were saying, like you can play a whole song on bass without moving your hand if you really think about it.
Yeah.
Use your noggin, not your whatever else it is you use.
Yeah.
You should be smart. Play smart, not hard.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and that thing it comes also coming around to these formative bass playing years. I had a teacher who was in the year above me at school. Mr. Travis Jenkins, also went by the name of Dirty Travis, reasons I don't know. But
is he in prison for? Is he on a list?
I don't think he's on a list. He's a proper jazzer these days. He loves his jazz. But back then he was into metal and he had like long hair and big long beard. Even though he was like at school still, you know.
It's funny how that goes. I know a lot of like. Former metalheads who are now really into jazz.
Yeah,
it's not a big. I said this to someone the other day. It is not a big jump.
Yeah, it's not.
When you think about it, it's not.
It's not a big jump.
When you first hear it, you go, "Oh, that's quite
jazzy." Yeah.
Quite jazzy.
Too jazzy.
Yeah.
Interesting. I was in the pub and my one of the guys I work with is like, "I don't like metal. I like jazz." There was probably some steps in the conversation in between this.
Yeah.
Like, you do realise it's not that big a jump from jazz to metal. It really isn't.
Yeah.
Like, sure, from like jazz to like crappy beatdown tough guy metal, yeah, it's probably a pretty good jump. From jazz to good metal,
yeah,
it's a small hop.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Just put some distortion on it and you're basically...
yeah.
All those arpeggios.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, basically, I remember Travis teaching me how to play bass. And one thing we talked about, I remember him showing me, like, you know, even though, like, there's obviously the correct technique that you should always be aiming for, sometimes, you know, it being rock and roll that you're playing... The rules can go out the window. I mean, he showed me like footage of Kurt Cobain playing guitar particularly badly because he wasn't like a well trained musician.
Yeah.
But he also was able to play that guitar in such a way that was just like raw and just amazing in its own way.
Yeah, I heard a I mean, this is comics, not music, but I actually think the same thing applies. There was a comics writer who said, you know, style is the thing you get wrong, but your style is the thing you get wrong, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's all the little flaws that make up your character rather than somebody else's.
Yeah.
If we were all perfect, we'd all be the same.
That's it, yeah. So, Tom, I've obviously asked Billy the question. For you, when is it you feel you became a musician?
I bet you look good on the dance floor.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Good way to get in there.
I was sitting, at least at the moment that it clicked that I was, or that clicked that I could be a musician, was sitting in front of the TV watching him, Kerrang, MTV2, whatever it was, and this really sort of grainy video of these four dudes in jeans, blue jeans and white t-shirts standing in a warehouse comes on, and this guy goes, "Hi, we're the Arctic Monkeys, don't believe the hype." And then rip this absolute banger, and I sat there and I went, well, if those guys can do it,
I had this exact moment,
so can I
was on, I was we were on this family like break thing, right, up in fucking Bundaberg, which is actually where they make Bundaberg rum.
Oh, nice.
But
cool.
I specifically remember sitting on the couch because I was bored and everyone else was off doing stuff, and I had MTV on, and there was this Arctic Monkeys music video, and I was like, wow, that is what I want to do.
So good.
Yeah, well, the rhythm is just like thrashing behind it, and he's just doing that lead part that's just kind of like ascending and descending. It's just...
Yeah, and I just looked at these four perfectly normal looking dudes.
Spotty as well. They were all spotty.
They were skinny, lanky, spotty, greasy teenagers.
Were you playing at that point?
Yeah.
You were playing at that
point?
Yeah,
definitely.
How old were you when you started? So it was in secondary school.
12 or 13. Yeah, like that sort of bracket. I was given a Rickenbacker, really fucking beaten up old Rickenbacker by
thick neck.
Yeah, like it was, man. It was heavy and it was very broken. I'm pretty sure if you plugged it in, like you had to wriggle the jack around loads before it started working.
Yeah.
His name was Giles. He lived over the road. He was my mum's friend, husband or boyfriend or something, and we used to hang out with her kids, and he was there, and we decided that we wanted to put a band together because Tom, the other kid over the road, played guitar, and James, his younger brother, played drums, and Giles had this bass, and I was like, well, I'll play bass, you know, why not? And the first song that he taught me was Obladi by the Beatles.
Nice.
And we ended up playing that at a like street party. It was the only song that as a band that we knew, and we had this girl singing that she was very, very attractive but not a very good singer, and we'd pretty much been like, yes, Emily from down the road, who we all fancy, you can be in the band. And it was great, and we sucked, and everybody got up and danced and enjoyed it as if we didn't suck. That first little taste of performing was just like, this is great. I want to do this more. I want to be in bands with Emily, the cute girl from down the road, as well. Obviously, as a young teenage boy, that is a vast motivation.
Yes. And instead, you ended up in a band with me.
I mean, you're cute, Scott. Don't put yourself down. And the cute girls never stopped appearing, did they?
there were plenty of gigs.
That was pretty much my beginning experience. But the moment when I was like, oh, this is real, like I could really do this, was seeing
the Arctic Monkeys video. Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, I think people listening on my channel have heard my story 1,000 times, and you both know it. I was 9 years old, and I watched Wayne's World and heard Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
and something just clicked inside of me, and you know, I ran and told my parents, "Oh, I want to be a musician and write songs and play them to people." And my dad said I was insane, and you know, my mum was very encouraging. And bought, and then yeah, and yeah, bought me Queen's Greatest Hits very shortly after, and I just listened to that album over and over and over again, and I just soaked in it, and yeah, started writing music on scraps of paper and singing into old cassette tapes, and I couldn't play anything till I was, you know, 11. But, you know, like, I heard full band songs in my head, like I still do now, like at 9, and that was kind of crazy. But, you know, it's not until literally like 20 years later now that I'm actually starting to finally maybe like capture a bit of like what I actually hear in my head when I hear those songs. But so that was kind of the thing that made me want to do it. And like it was seeing Freddie Mercury, we got like old VHS tape of like Freddie playing at, I don't know, playing at Wembley. It wasn't Live Aid, but we'd watch that after Wayne's World. And just seeing him like run about on stage and entertaining the crowd, you know, I think I was definitely more attracted to the front man thing, like at first, than like any instrument, you know. That was definitely it, you know. It was kind of like, you know, just there's thousands of people there, like how is he just like not scared, not like,
probably was.
I mean, he probably, yeah, he probably was a bit. Pretty terrified. Yeah. I mean, like, I was a pretty shy kid, you know, like, you know, and just seeing that, I don't know, suddenly I just felt like I could just get up on stage and start doing it, and like I didn't have to pretend. It was just really bizarre. It was like not like a personality flip, but like a door to myself opened up. But like I was drums first. That was my thing, because there was a guy over the road from where my grandparents lived who was like 5 years older than me, and he played the drums. And like I thought at that point guitar was really lame. I don't know why, but I was just like,
I want to hit things.
I was like, yeah, you get to hit things and it sounds cool. And when I learned about Dave Grohl, and I was like, oh, that dude drums and sings. I was like, I gotta be like that. But then you eventually get into bands, and then like, you know, there's someone else dancing up front, and you go, no, that's supposed to be me. Sorry. and then like, yeah, I just kind of learned guitar as a necessity and ended up kind of falling in love with it in a way. But I was terrible for years. I was the epitome of a bad musician. Like my first gig playing an instrument, I played all the wrong notes. You know, I was playing bass for a band, and like I just thought, oh, when you just play whatever you think sounds good. I didn't realize you had to play the same notes as the guitar guy. And so the whole gig, everyone in the crowd was just staring at me, just like, and I thought, oh, it's because I'm really good, isn't it? So bad. I was just like, we're playing Can't Stop by the Chili Peppers, and I'm like all over the place. It was just, yeah, some sort of abstract jazz thing. It wasn't until we went into the studio for like the guitarist's birthday to record the songs, and I was just doing it, and the guy in the engineering booth, because none of the parents, none of the guys in the band had, I don't know, the balls to tell me like, what you're playing is awful and weird. It was the guy in the recording booth who goes, mate, what are you doing? And yeah. I was just like, I'm playing this song. He's like, no, you need to play what the guitar's playing. And I was like, no one ever told me this mysterious fact. And so I did that for like nearly a year, and no one told me. So yeah, man, having lessons definitely helps. So you guys, you said your friend Travis.
Dirty Travis.
Travis told you.
Call him by his name, please. Yeah. Dirty Travis.
Dirty Travis. And yeah, your friend, was it Giles?
Well, he taught. Yeah, he taught, I mean, you. But after that, I didn't have any lessons.
You didn't have any lessons.
No, I had, from when I started to until I went to college. There's a few years, and I'd already been in bands and stuff by then, and I started having lessons.
Yeah. I didn't realise you had lessons at college.
Yeah, I had.
Or do I just forget?
I never
this?
Fucking turned up to them, you know. Like,
no.
Because I liked the guy.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh yeah, it's nice. I've got like another student that's supposedly on your sort of level with what we're actually teaching you, but she's technically nowhere near as good. I was like, thanks, man, that's really nice. And I enjoyed it, and he helped. But yeah, my mum paid for like two terms of lessons, and I must have gone to about a third of them because I just didn't like being told what to do.
What to do? Yeah, yeah.
And also, like, there were just other things. You know, I could be sitting in that room, or I could be exploring the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Weirdly, like, when I was doing lessons, obviously I was learning proper technique and stuff, and he was also trying to show me how to lock in with drums a bit and everything like that. Like,
yeah.
He had a drum kit, and we would play, like, Pink Floyd songs and stuff, and he would do the drums, and I'd play, like, Money and stuff along with it. And it's weird, like, obviously I still sucked quite a lot in my first band that was in Distant Red, which I've talked about before.
Yeah.
We were awful. We were just like teenagers just having a crack at it. And you know, I wasn't locking in with the drum, and I was overplaying, playing way too many notes, just because I thought, you know, I had to be showy, had to be showing off, doing, you know, as much as I could on the bass. Usually that would make me go completely out of time and things like that. Like, I was shockingly bad. It wasn't until I moved over here and joined Will Be Down, and probably not until we started recording, and then from that, getting the second drummer, that I started really focusing more on how, because that drummer was a good drummer, I suppose. Johnny, bless him, was okay,
yeah,
but he always changed what he was playing, so it was impossible to lock into his part if he kept changing the part. You know,
doesn't make it difficult.
Yeah, so. Next drummer comes on, Damien, and Damien's like a rock solid drummer, and it taught me so much, like, about locking in rhythmically with what he's playing, and that just made me better over time. Like, it's kind of one of those things where obviously practice makes perfect, but also just doing it with other musicians and more different kinds of musicians, you learn something from each one.
You learn something
which
from
makes
every
you,
single person you come across.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're in your own little role-playing game. You're leveling up each time you play with someone new, almost. You know, you get a little bit more XP.
Mm.
Okay, so this is interesting. Sorry, you're going to say something,
right? I mean, you go.
Okay.
It's all good.
That's a great transition. so, you know, one thing I wanted to talk to you two guys about in a podcast at some point is the fact you are both bassists, and I've worked with both of you quite extensively now. Obviously, like, me and Tom have known each other a bit longer.
Yeah, yeah. But there's been a big gap.
But there was a big gap where me and Billy worked together a lot, and now I'm working with both of you. You both play in my new EP, and both bring something very different, but equally kind of awesome. You know, and so you have two different approaches. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, as bass players, you know, in talking about drumming, you know, or just fitting in with the rest of the band, you know, when you play with, I want to know both of your experience of this, when you play with, like, bad musicians, is it trickier to, like, get into... You kind of get into
definitely.
It, like, it just makes it more difficult.
Yeah,
you know,
the drummer makes or breaks it.
Drummer makes or breaks it.
If you're in a live setting and the drummer's not up to scratch, then it's just gonna ruin the evening for me.
He is 100% on the nose there. Like, I've been really lucky with the drummers I've played with. It's most of my time playing in a band has been with Harry Shakespeare.
Yeah,
machine.
Absolute machine. He was
Robin. Absolute machine.
Great.
Rob, very, very different styles. Harry's was very much like more simple and more powerful, and Robin's was a bit more sort of delicate and fancy, but still just solid. Always, always solid.
Yeah.
And I've had very minimal experience playing with people who suck.
Yeah.
We had one audition for a guy to play in BFR, which is my last band. This guy, I won't name names because but he was just all over the place. You know, one of those drummers who thinks that everything just has to be a constant, like on the toms. It sounded like I was trying to, and he was really badly out of time. And the rest of the band were like, yeah, he'll do. And I was like, no, he won't. I'm sorry, guys, but it's not happening.
It's like I auditioned for a covers band. And the drummer used to be the bass player, apparently. And
I think I know the one you're talking
about. And like, bless them, they were nice chaps and everything, but like, he couldn't play drums.
Yeah.
And it was that was a struggle. Yeah.
drummer doesn't have to be like, you know, it doesn't have to be Neil Peart. You just have to be in time and consistent.
Yeah. And would you say part of, you know, when you play with a drummer and like you really lock in, is there like, is there a lot of conversation that goes on between the two of you, or is it intuition, or is it just getting to know the person quite well? What's the secret to it?
Definitely, like for myself, having played with Donna for so long.
Yeah.
She'll suggest something, or I'll suggest something, and we talk it out. Sometimes we've had disagreements on how things should go, but yeah. We talk it out, and you know, try things out. We both know each other's kind of limits, I think, as well. And I do think, like, for any band, like, if the drummer's bad, it's going to make the bass player look bad as well. And if the bass player's bad, it's going to make the drummer look bad as well. Yeah. There's a weird symbiotic relationship there. And then if both the bass player and the drummer are good, it's going to make the guitarist look good, depending, even if they're crap.
Yeah.
Like, it just does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very different. Like, me and Harry Shakespeare used to just be able to make eye contact and start playing in time, in style, and then just literally look at each other and go into something.
I remember that, yeah.
It was weird, man. It was, I'm not even sure where that came from. I think it just worked, didn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever had a conversation with him about what we were doing. We just did it.
Oh, yeah.
But Robin was the opposite. Like, me and him used to, we talk about it quite a lot. And some of his patterns were a bit chaotic, so it was like,
would you ever ask him to simplify things?
Yeah, just tone it down a bit, mate. I'm trying to stick with you.
Yeah. Have you ever done the same thing with Donna or anyone else? Have you been like, you need to simplify it? Or do they say the same thing to you?
Yeah, maybe sometimes to me. It really depends on, like, it's always about servicing the song.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, but like, you know, like with Donna and myself, like if we're playing and we're just jamming, and like we it's all about listening to each other and listening for cues and stuff. Like, I can tell just by, like, if she starts doing a fill, we're going to the next section and stuff like, you know, like, it's listening for those sort of cues, and she's listening to if I'm doing something interesting in bass, and she'll try and match that as well. But it's usually when we usually talk about things when the song needs a certain something here or there, and then we work on that part together, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think for me, like, I've in the Tokyo Sex Whales, I've just probably been 30 different members over the lifespan of the band, and you know, it's been such a mixed ability kind of group, because it's just the things I was kind of trying to ask of people, saying, you know, I want to go on tour and I want to travel around the country for extended periods of time. Do you want to do that? And some people have other responsibilities, so they don't want to do it. And then other people do. And then sometimes you find the people that do are like really eager and really up for things, but maybe not as high in the skill level chart, you know. And some of the people who can't make it, you're like, I really wish you were.
I really wish you were, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
You have a 3-point system, don't you?
Yes.
For who's in and who's out.
Yeah. Obviously, me, Billy, we've talked about it before. You know the three rules I have. You know, are they a nice person? Are they reliable? Are they shit hot? You know, if you can have two out of the three, then you're in. You know, that's what I need. You know, it's hard to know. I try to, I aspire to be all three. It's difficult to be all three, honestly. It's I really don't know if I'm shit hot. I'm probably not, you know. I think as a musician, I was always growing up incredibly intimidated, because before I was in bands with Tom, where I feel like I finally found my groove. I was in bands with guys who very like technical, very like, they got into guitar and within a very short period of time, like, shot forward and got really good. I just got really super technical, and I felt like I had to keep up and try.
They're all metal fans, aren't they?
Yeah, all metal fans.
Big metalheads.
And I wasn't into that kind of playing. I was into songwriting, you know. That was kind of
different.
That was kind of my thing. And then, like, you know, there was I for years afterwards, I carried it, you know, with me, that I felt that I was not a good musician because I couldn't do that kind of stuff.
Oh, but that's not the definition, is it?
But like, no, and it's not. No. I'm saying is that was wrong for me to think that. Yeah, and it's something I've shaken off now, you know, but, you know, it's kind of... Yeah, it's just kind of how it is, you know. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, the funny thing about music, though, is there's always things you can improve about your playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm never going to be able to solo, like, Jaco Pastorius, you know, or even...
Portraits of Tracy, yeah. It's not that hard.
Or even, like, you know, slap as good as Flea does, but...
Vic Wooten.
I'm never going to be Davey 504 or that other pro on YouTube, Charles, what's his name. But I did think this, you know, during furlough, during lockdown, I was like, well, my slap game has been lacking my whole bass playing career. I could slap, but I couldn't like hold it together very well.
Yeah.
So I thought I'm going to improve that, and I have improved it, you know, significantly compared to what I was, but not like the point where I'm like crazy good at it. Yeah. I've always been better at finger style. I couldn't play pick, for example. That's another thing. Like, I could work on that. That could be my next little thing I could work on.
The trick to playing bass with a pick is just to get the chunkiest pick you can possibly get your hand on.
But also, picks are illegal, so yeah.
They're not. If you're in a punk band, they are in. Picks are in.
Yeah, you do get that chunky sound.
It's a great sound. Yeah. It's not as much fun to do.
Yeah. So is a, you know, in order to be a good musician, do you have to constantly keep pushing yourself, or is a good musician someone that reaches a certain level and it's just like, yeah, I'm good, I don't need to improve? Is that a bad musician?
That's probably
actually
the difference more between a good musician and an exceptional musician, almost, I reckon.
Okay.
I feel like I'm good enough to play any, you know, most genres, like pretty much any genre I could play to some sort of ability.
Yeah.
But to play like really, really crazy technical slap funk or something, like, I could probably give it a go, but I wouldn't be as good as maybe Tom, because Tom is much better at slap bass than myself. So yeah.
We should have a slap showdown.
Slap off.
Slap bass battle from Scott Pilgrim was so disappointing.
That'd be amazing.
But I don't know about the constant progression versus. I don't think it's ever good to plateau, not deliberately at least, like to just go, ah, fuck it. Like,
it's always room to learn.
Yeah.
Always room for more.
Like in life in general, just don't sit there and go, ah, fuck it, this'll do.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, you don't necessarily have to push either. A friend of mine said to me the other day, why would I push when I can just roll? She's better. She's great. She does. She's brilliant at everything that she does, and she, but her attitude is like, I'm getting there by enjoying it.
You know, subtle art of not giving a fuck.
One of her favorite. Yeah, someone actually lent her that book.
Yeah, I read that
and
book.
They gave it to her with the caveat of, this is probably just teaching you everything that you already know, but you might enjoy it anyway.
Good book.
But it's that kind of idea of just, I don't know, and what makes someone a bad musician. Bad attitude,
I think,
for sure.
I think
that's the thing, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I think I've worked with people, and I'm not gonna name names, but I've worked with people who've very much like, I'll say, oh, would you be able to play this, play that, because these the songs and they were recorded that way by other musicians, and they go, no, I'm gonna play it my way, and like, I'm open to people like interpreting my songs in different ways. That's what makes it fun. But like, if they do it in a different way that kind of damages the song and isn't supporting the song, if they're doing it to like support their own ego instead of supporting the song, like, that's, I guess, bad attitude, and that's where I'd say that's a bad musician, and that's someone I can't work with. Because again, yeah, I'm open to people bringing their own thing, you know, but if it doesn't serve the song, that's kind of and I've counted that quite a lot. But go on.
Yeah, I think that might be I don't know about good and bad musicians. I think that might be the thing for me, would be the attitude that you bring to it.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think that the thing that's always, I've always wondered and always pondered what qualifies good and bad music.
Yeah.
And I suppose it boils down to the same thing. It's the, do you love what you're doing?
Mm.
You know, are you doing it out of love for it? And are you enjoying it? And is the thing that you're coming out with really coming from, like, the heart? And if it is, then it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
For other people, for yourself, for... and if it's not, then it kind of sucks. You know, I think that's probably...
Yeah, I think I think you nailed it there. Yeah, like the difference between bad and good music is bad music is music without passion behind it. That's just kind of
elevated music.
Elevated music. That's a genre I've not got into.
The Sims background music.
Sims background music.
Yeah, no, nobody loved doing that. Like, nobody loved that.
But yeah, I guess like the obvious things about bad musicianship though is just, you know, bad timing, bad tuning. Those sort of things are just obvious.
Yeah, it's not that hard to tune your guitar. Yeah. Like, we have devices that will basically do it for you now. So
and if you struggle to keep in time and stuff like that, it's just, if you, it's the sort of things that you're going to suck at the beginning of anyway. I think once you get to a confident ability, you pretty much are a good musician. As long as you, but the other thing is, I was kind of alluding to it before, like playing with bands is some of the best experience you're going to get, because you do get people that never play in bands. They just play for themselves.
Bedroom musicians.
And you put them in a band setting and they just don't know what to do.
Yeah. And, you know, while I was teaching at the prison, which I'm no longer doing apparently, one thing I picked up and realised I had to teach, which wasn't just obvious to the guys, was that actually, like, yeah, this is the thing you're learning, but actually there's a whole other instrument you need to learn how to use, and it's this.
Yeah, your ears.
It's your ears. It's being able to listen and respond and use your intuition, you know, and, you know, because, yeah, responding to the musicians you're playing with, you know, that's... That's totally it, you know, and it is a skill. It's something you have to develop over time, you know, and as we all three of us know, you know, when you play in a band and you're playing all together at the same time, there's this weird symbiotic osmosis strange undefinable kind of thing happening.
It comes from the sky.
The amount of times that we've just done something just happens, and we all happen at the same time. You've got five guys standing there playing music, four or five guys standing there playing music together, and something, and you just burst out laughing, or I look around in wonder and like, the hell did this come from? Why, how has this thing just come from all of our brains at once? Makes me believe in telepathy, man. It is something else. Like, and some of the best bands I've ever seen, it looks like you're watching one thing on stage. You know, Gojira, I'd never heard them before.
Yeah.
And I saw them at Download a few years ago. It was a miserable weekend, apart from, it's girl problems. apart from seeing Gojira and just watching these guys play this fast, hard, technical music, throwing themselves around on stage, but just as if they were one.
Yeah.
Didn't miss a note, didn't miss a beat. Just, it's that weird, symbiotic weirdness.
I've had two moments of that, both with you, actually.
Yeah.
In the band thing, it's when we came up with How's That for Impact. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do.
It's get that you had that mad tapping thing in it. The it was like,
oh yeah, yeah.
And then
like
Sonny and Harry came in and did their things, and like I came in and like it all just kind of happened. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. And then in These Are Teeth, when we came up with Lose, the session where we did lose, like that was just one of those moments where it just kind of happened in the room and it just blew my mind. Just looking around, like we were all just loving it. Oh. And I was like, yeah, those moments are great. Have you ever had one of those moments?
Yeah, Continental Breakfast. Yeah. Me, Matt and Donna are in a room and it just, that I started playing like B and Matt came in and Donna came in and was like, whoa. This is going well, isn't it? I was just playing the song.
Guys, we seem to have found a song.
Have you had that with Brave Rival at Albany? Or?
Oh, yeah. Also, just those moments you get on stage where it's literally like you're having an orgasm on stage. You know? Your hairs are on end.
A mind meld.
You're in the nirvana, you know, of the moment, and it's like it's literally feeling better than sex.
As my mate say, vibing in the eternal now.
Vibing in the eternal now.
That is literally like the most potent drug of the whole experience of gigging, I think, because when you have those particular moments on stage. It's like, I want that all the time. But you don't get it every gig.
No, you don't.
You can't replicate it, man.
You're constantly chasing it, and sometimes you get it. Sometimes you get it at practice. I did get it at practice recently. We did the new Brave Rival song.
Yeah.
And it's very tasty. And when it gets to a particular moment, it's like, yeah, this is the shit.
But, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Mm. Did you have that in Blind Fire?
Yeah, there was a song and we shelved it because people started getting pissy about minor details.
Okay.
But there was a moment in it where it kind of did, it was like a stop chorus type thing. It was like, bow, bow, bring me the fire. cool. And we did it.
Sounded epic.
Yeah. And like the first time we actually did it, and this was in a practice room, this wasn't even at a gig.
Yeah.
We just kind of, just looked at each other like, what? That is naughty.
Cool.
Yeah, and like a few moments like that, and there's one that you've definitely heard, Scott. What is it? Bow, 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 bow. Force of Habit.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, that
one. When we were, it was actually one of the best moments we had with that one was we had just finished writing it. And we decided that we would practice it in the smoking area at the pub, but we didn't have our instruments. We were just all kind of singing
the parts.
Guitar parts, and that's like Mike brilliant. Was singing, and we were like sort of dropping in and like, when we'd finished, and it just sort of went really, really well. We got it all in order, and we were like, right, we'll be fine. We finished doing it, and everyone in the smoking area started like applauding. We hadn't realised that everyone had stopped what they were doing to listen, and we were like, we're probably gonna fuck it up later. But yeah, that's those moments when just impromptu, unexpected, as I say, you can't force it, can you?
No.
You can't force that tingle.
It's
that
a good
thing
tingle,
and
but, yeah.
Oh, that's great, man.
You gotta let it happen.
I just man, and songwriting, like every now and then when I write a song and I break through and I go, oh bloody hell, I've got something here. I go, oh wow, okay. When I wrote Two Cats, I kind of had that sensation. Like,
I was literally just about to ask.
Yeah, it was
Two Cats.
I mean, that was kind of a weird gradual thing because it started as me sitting down going, I want to make, because I was doing my animation channel at the time, I want to make a funny animated song, you know, and thinking, oh, what am I going to write about? Then seeing the two cats on the fence outside making their little hand gestures at each other and then start going, two cats having a conversation, two cats chatting about stuff, you know, and then just thinking, oh, that's stupid, I'm not going to write that. And then the song following me round in the back of my head every now and then, just be walking along the streets going, two cats having a conversation, you know, and then eventually actually going, okay, damn it, I need to write it and get it out my system. But then once I put music to it, I was like, oh my word, I was like everyone's going to hate this, but I love it. And then it's the,
yeah, everyone loves it.
People really like that song. So.
I love that song. It's a great song.
Yeah, man. So, the magic of music, man. yeah, should we wrap it there?
Yeah.
I'm feeling it. Yeah, man.
Summary.
In summary.
You're only a bad musician if you're a dickhead.
That's it, yeah.
And you don't keep in time.
And you
don't keep in tune.
Yeah, because I think we could
have... play saxophone.
Hey, now.
Hey, I want to learn to play saxophone. Yeah.
Sorry, actually, saxophones are pretty cool.
Saxophones are beautifully expressive.
What is the worst instrument?
What is the worst
annoying instrument? Got me the bagpipe.
I can't say that.
Billy Deadman. The bagpipes are rousing, sir.
They're rousing, sir.
To be fair, though, badly played bagpipes.
Yeah.
Badly played violin. Mm. Horrendous, both.
Do we like the didgeridoo? Didgeridoo's
I love
nice.
A didgeridoo.
Pretty awesome.
There's something really zen about playing didgeridoo.
Yeah.
Worst instrument. That could be a topic almost.
Most annoying noises.
Top 10 worst instruments. I don't know, man. I don't know if I could pick a worst instrument. I mean, I find really like cheesy 80s kind of electric keyboard sounds. Whenever I hear a song start with that, I want to puke. No. Jump by Van Halen is probably my top 10 favourite songs of all time. I don't mean that. No, I'm talking about very cheesy, ballady kind of almost Fender Rhodes, but Fender Rhodes is cool. But like the 80s, they just like electric keyboard sounds just got really cheesy.
They also just discovered MIDI, didn't they?
They were like,
we can have any instrument we want, and not realising really. Like not, it's not like CGI same, in yeah. films when you first yeah, saw yeah, the yeah. this first like the Star Wars prequels. You were like, oh my god,
yeah,
CGI, and you watch it now, and you're like, oh my god,
CGI.
It's the same
Misa
thing.
Misa going home. Yeah, man. Man, it's been a cool conversation. I will admit now at the end that when we sat down and started setting up the microphones, we didn't know what we were going to talk about today. We picked it last minute, but it actually worked out really well.
Maybe we should do that every time.
pull
them out of a hat in the future.
Pull them out of a hat. Maybe we will. Hmm. It's been a real good one. It's been our 15th. Wow, at 15 already. Cool beans. I have been Scott Freeman, and with me as always is Billy Deadman.
Hey.
And our very special guest for the third time, Mr. Tom Riddler.
Ciao, Bella.
We'll see you next time, guys. Peace.
Bye.